We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What is up, everybody? This is episode number 15 of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. I can't believe we have actually done 15 of these. Today, we have Rich Kaufman instead of Scott in. Scott had a prior commitment. So, Rich, what's up?
What is up?
So, last time we had you on, it was the A-Rod episode, I think episode number 3.
Yeah.
So, how you been since then?
Good. Yankees in a bit of a tough stretch with the schedule, but A-Rod has double-digit home runs. Raise your hand if you thought that was going to happen by, what is it, May 17th.
Well, you were one of them.
Yeah, I was one of them. Few and far between.
So let's start with a little bit of breaking news. So after the game today, Brian Hawk tweeted that the Yankee mustaches are starting to disappear. First to go was Esmail Rogers, seemed to be clean-shaven now. I don't know about you, but I think that might be a good sign. I feel like the mustaches were played out after a fun 3-week ride.
Yeah, I think they've run their course. I think the mojo is gone. They lost 3 out of 4 to the Rays. They lost 2 out of 3 to the Royals. They're not hitting, so I think they it's a good decision to get rid of those mustaches.
I was watching the game the other night, and I was like, you know, the mustaches are actually starting to look pretty decent. They're pretty thick, and I was like, who's going to be the first to shave and be like, guys, this was maybe not a great idea. I look like an asshole.
I was waiting to see the first guy was to crack on that, but I guess Rogers is the first one to go, and it'll be interesting to see who else follows. But
well, it was certainly a fun little thing, and it seemed to be working for a while. But as you mentioned, this past week they were 2-5, ugly games this past week, and you know maybe the off day coming tomorrow. I feel like I need an off day from baseball. It's been like 19 days in a row. And I'm just exhausted watching the games.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, their schedule is, I mean, it's way different this year, I feel like, than it has been the past few years. They have 2 off days this week, which is strange. You don't really don't see that much.
I mentioned that last time. The scheduling sometimes makes no sense to me. To have a Monday off day and then a Thursday off day. I know the 2-game series kind of throws a wrench into it. Because they have the interleague games with the Nationals, and then I think they play the Nationals again later in the year for 2 games at the stadium. But the 2 games just throws a stupid like little twist in the season where, okay, you haven't had an off day for a month, and now you have 2 in 1 week, and it just sort of wastes an off day.
Yeah, and it's we've been so used to seeing them playing the AL East, and now they don't play an AL East opponent until July, I think, which is really strange.
And they also play Kansas City again next week. And then they don't play him again for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's quick.
So if Kansas, you know, it's like if you run into a hot Kansas City team, which they are, you know, you could lose, you know, 5 out of 6 or 4 out of 6, and then you don't see him again.
Right. Yeah, it could set you back big time.
Yeah. But all right, let's get into a little bit of the game recaps here. They after the weekend series win, they again got hot in Tampa. The first game, they hit a bunch of home runs. Beltran, has been really heating up. Which is good to see. But Beltran went deep, A-Rod went deep, Teixeira went deep, Gardner hit a 3-run home run to center, which was an absolute blast off Gardner's bat, and Headley hit a home run. So things were looking good with an 11-5 win last Monday.
Yeah, they started off on the right foot. I mean, Sabathia finally got his first win since in over a year, since April of last year. And you figured that was a good sign for the road trip, but it kind of fell apart shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I guess there's really not much to nitpick from that first game, but I think we're going to find some things to discuss over the next few games. So that next game, they were facing Archer, and Archer's one of the best pitchers in baseball, I think. He's absolutely filthy.
And he kills the Yankees.
Yep, this was the first time they were facing him all year. They'd played Tampa already, what, like 7 times, and they hadn't seen him yet. So
they missed him.
They got a break there. Mm-hmm. And they look good to start. First 5 guys reached, and they had 2 runs in, bases loaded with 1 out, and that's all they got.
Yeah, I feel like we've seen this a lot from this team, especially over the past 2 seasons. They kind of let the the starting pitchers settle in after they get runs early, and then they just get shut down for the rest of the game, and it's real frustrating to watch.
It is, because if this team, I mean, the offense seems to be hitting a lot of home runs, which is good, but they don't string a lot of hits together, and you know, maybe they hit a lot of solo home runs because not a lot, of guys are on base, and against a guy like Archer, who's again one of the best pitchers in the league, if you don't rough him up in the first couple innings and really take advantage of that. I mean, that should have been a 5-0 game or a 4-0 game after the first inning.
Yeah, they had him on the ropes, and you already won the first game. You really want to, I mean, if you get the Rays down in the first inning against Archer, that's pretty demoralizing, and they could have controlled the rest of the game. But for Archer to get out of that, giving up only two runs, that was huge. Huge momentum swing to the Rays.
It was, and it, I mean, the game seemed to be going okay. Eovaldi had, I thought, his best start of the season. Seven innings. He was through six innings with no runs. And then in the seventh, he got into a little bit of a jam. And Girardi let him face DeJesus with second and third. It was still a 2-0 game at this point. Would you have brought in a lefty there? Wilson, maybe Shreve to face DeJesus, or would you have left Eovaldi in there?
Eovaldi had, what, 80-something pitches, I think, at the time?
Yeah, he looked great.
Yeah, I probably would have left him in to face DeJesus.
I agree with that. I think, you know, in hindsight, obviously, it wasn't the right move. But yeah. I think Eovaldi was pitching. He was pitching great, and you try and let him get out of that jam. But it was still a 2-2 game coming out of that inning. So, I mean, it was still obviously a game, looked like they could still win it. And then he brings them back out for the eighth inning.
Yeah, that is my main problem with that game. I think Girardi, that's one of the few games over the course of a season that the manager kind of cost you. And I think that was one of them. I mean, granted, Eovaldi had to do his job there, but I think you got to start the inning with Betances.
Yeah, and maybe it goes to the fact that I don't think Girardi trusts anybody in that pen other than Betances and Miller. So he's thinking, okay, I'm in a tie game in the eighth inning. Who do I go to? Leave my starter. Maybe he felt Eovaldi was a better bet than bringing in a guy like Carpenter or a guy like, you know, whoever he would have brought in.
Yeah, I mean, Girardi, he trusts. I feel like, I mean, he never left Hughes in to start an inning late in the game. He did not trust Hughes at all.
No one trusted Hughes.
No one. He would leave Sabathia in. He would trust Sabathia. He would leave Pettit in.
Yeah, so but I those guess, you get the benefit of the doubt being a veteran like Pettit that's CeCe.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like Eovaldi's been here for a few years and he's kind of earned Girardi's trust, I guess you could say. I just think that you worry about the day's game. You worry about winning the day's game, and you worry about tomorrow when it comes. So you bring in your best guy to start the inning rather than, you know, rest him, which Girardi likes to do.
Yeah, and obviously it didn't work out. They ended up losing that game 4-2, and I totally agree with you. Right after the game, I immediately pinpointed that game as that was really the first game of the season that Girardi blew for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it took, what, 34 games. So whoever had game 34 in the Girardi will blow a game pool, congratulations, you just won. I probably had game like 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And the next night out, I'm looking at the notes here. The next night out, they lost again 3-2. They had two runs in the first inning again, and then nothing after that.
And who pitched that game for the Rays? Who was that?
That's a great question. I don't even remember. Warren pitched for the Yanks, and he pitched great.
Right.
I can't recall who.
Okay.
But regardless, you got the starter again on the ropes in the first inning, and that's it. You go to sleep afterwards.
Right, and they had 10 hits, which is, you know, you look at the line score and you say, oh, wow, 10 hits, that's, you know, they got to score more than two runs. Well, they were all singles, and it's hard to win when you hit, you know, when you go station to station. I mean, it's hard to win when you go station to station.
Yep, and all singles. And again, if this team isn't going to hit home runs, it's tough for them to score runs. I just looked it up. It was Carnes that pitched for Tampa,
and they had they killed them at the stadium, I think, when the Rays were in a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, how many times have we seen this team do that? Look like they're in an all-star lineup one night, and then the next night out look like they've never played baseball before.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah, so it's just frustrating because I'd like to see this team, with the runs in the first couple innings, and then they just totally disappear after that. As a fan watching the game, you just want to pull your hair out because the starters are doing their job. Warren pitched mm-hmm. 7 innings and only gave up 3 runs, and he comes out of there with the loss. Like that's just if I'm Warren, I'm pissed about that. I mean, you go down there, you part pitch one of the best games of the year as Warren for Warren, and then you got a loss to show for it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't waste a start by Adam Warren when he gives up 3 earned runs. You have to win that game.
And another second guess moment here is that Girardi, in a losing game, brought Miller out for the 8th inning, down a run on the road.
I guess he wanted to get Miller some work, but again, it's just frustrating the way Girardi manages a bullpen. I mean, one of his strengths, I guess, is managing a bullpen, knowing when to use guys, when to sit guys. But I hate to compare Girardi to Joe Torre, but Torre would always go with his best guy. I feel like he would run guys out there. I guess that's why Scott Proctor's career is ruined, because Torre would always run him out there. But Girardi is all about rest. He's all about giving guys days off in May so they're not tired in August. And I get that, but I want you to win the game today with your best guy, not with Esmer Rogers on the mound.
Well, it's so easy to look at those two games, Tuesday and Wednesday, and say, okay, you had a lead in the 7th inning, and you let your starter stay out there, and they end up losing it, when you could have gone to Betances and Miller to get 8, maybe 9
right,
outs.
And then you bring in Miller when you're down a run.
Exactly. So yeah. it just makes no sense. You if he wanted to rest them, you could have rested them in that game too, because they were still in the middle of a 19-game stretch with no off days. Mm-hmm. It's not like Miller hadn't pitched in a week.
Right.
So, I mean, obviously, he only threw 10 pitches, so I feel stupid getting mad about it, but it's sort of the principle of it.
Yeah, you bring him in when you're down a run instead of when you're trying to win a game the night before. Yeah, it just sometimes it just doesn't make sense.
And then they dropped the last game in Tampa 6-1. Got some bad news. Whitley left the game in the 2nd inning with what was reported as an elbow sprain. And I mean, that's got Tommy John surgery written all over it.
Yeah, that seems to be the trend these days. It's remarkable how many pitchers are going under the knife with Tommy John. No one's really been able to figure it out, unfortunately, what causes it. Is it too many innings in the minors? Is it the pitches these guys throw these days? Is it the way they work out? It's kind of hard to pinpoint, but I don't think we'll be seeing Whitley anytime soon.
Well, I'm sure if you asked Nolan Ryan, it would be that these guys aren't pitching enough innings.
Right. He wants his – or when he was with the Rangers. Is he still with the Rangers?
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah, his –
We haven't seen the Rangers on TV much, so we haven't seen Nolan Ryan sitting behind a home plate, but he might be. I don't know.
Yeah, his whole thing with that organization is he wants his guys to throw complete games every time out.
Just because he did it.
Right,
just because he pitched like a million innings doesn't mean it's just not the way that the world – it's not the way the baseball world is now.
Yeah, I mean, Nolan Ryan's a freak, and his arm is – he's got a rubber arm, so – But and then Whitley said after the game that he'd been pitching hurt the past couple of starts, and then that he wanted to pitch through it. And I bet the Yankees really aren't too happy about that, because they're big on these guys kind of self-reporting how they feel. And they needed Whitley, and if he had said something sooner, they could have shut him down, and this could have been avoided at least until a later date.
Yeah, I feel like that must have given Girardi an ulcer.
Yeah, I can only imagine his reaction when he heard Whitley's comments.
And you might be saying, like, okay, it's Whitley, you know, that's not going to make or break the Yankee season.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, they were getting Capuano back soon, and that meant, I think, Warren was probably going to go to the bullpen, and he was great in the bullpen last year. So that would have added another guy in the 7th inning that Girardi could have trusted. Instead of Betances and Miller, you could go to Warren in a situation like in Tampa when you're in a tie game. And maybe you don't find yourself using Eovaldi for the 8th inning. But instead, Warren's going to have to stay in the rotation because Whitley went down until either Tanaka or Nova come back.
Right. I think Warren is way more valuable in the pen because he takes pressure off other guys. So when Girardi wants to give Betances a day off or Wilson a day off, he can go to Warren, who's almost automatic last year. But now he has to stay in the rotation where this past start, it was the first time in his career he's gone seven innings, into the seventh inning.
Yeah. And you can see it when he pitches an inning out of the bullpen, his velocity's up a couple miles an hour. Some guys are just suited for the pen.
Right. It's the same thing with Phil Hughes in 2009. You know, these starters who come out of the bullpen, they can just let it loose for one inning. They don't have to save anything for the entire game. They don't have to, you know, vary their pitches. They can just come at you with gas, 97 miles an hour, bang, bang, bang. They don't have to save anything. Warren's more effective in the pen.
It's like the guy that pitched for Kansas City today, Wade Davis, right? He used to be in Tampa.
Yeah.
He was sort of like a number five starter in Tampa. He goes to Kansas City in that James Shields trade, mm-hmm. and he's lights out in the bullpen.
I was thinking to myself today, I was like, I don't remember Wade Davis ever being this good.
No, he wasn't. He was like Adam Warren as a starter.
I remembered he was a starter, and now he's coming out of the pen. He's throwing 98 miles an hour with a filthy slider. He's unhittable.
That Kansas City bullpen is just unreal.
It is. It's insane. And the Yankees kind of are copying what the Royals have done over these past two seasons: defense and bullpen, which is the blueprint for the Royals. That's how they got to the World Series last year. So the Royals are kind of the standard right now, I feel like, in the American League.
So that's the new Moneyball?
Yeah, it's a trend, you know. Bullpens are crazy. Bullpens these days are, I mean, you got guys coming in throwing harder than the starters. Like, when did that ever happen?
I feel like the Cardinals always have guys that are coming out throwing 98 miles an hour too.
Oh yeah, like Waka came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And Rosenthal.
I don't know where they find him or what kind of programs they have him on, but Yankees could use some of that.
Yeah, right. We could take some of their scouting department guys.
One more thing I wanted to mention in that last game in Tampa, though, is Whitley left in the second inning. Esmiel Rogers comes in, who's a long man and who I'm pretty freaking tired of seeing at this point.
Yeah, it's never really a good sign when you see Esmiel Rogers in the game because it either means the Yankees are getting blown out. No, that's usually what it means when the Yankees are getting blown out or someone's hurt. You see Esmiel Rogers in the game.
And then he immediately gives up a home run to Rene Rivera, who's hitting like 120 or something.
Yeah, I mean, when someone gets hurt and you bring in a reliever, they have all the time in the world to warm up. They can take however long they want, and Rogers took about 3 minutes to warm up, and that's really not enough. Even Ken Singleton mentioned it on the air. He said how Rogers really didn't take his time. And boom, first pitch, the Yankees are down, what was it, 5-0 at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, with the way the offense was going those last few games in Tampa, that might as well have been 50-0.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was game over. You were just waiting for the innings to roll by.
I'm ready. I'm done with Esmiel Rogers. I don't know about you.
Yeah. I don't know who else you would put in that role, though. He's kind of just a take one for the team kind of guy, but I'm pretty sick of him.
He's given up at least one run in his last four games pitched.
Yeah, that's not good. And that 19-inning game against the Red Sox earlier this year, he gave up the lead twice.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, he gave up, it was a tie game, and he gave up the go-ahead run twice.
Right. I'm not expecting Esmiel Rogers to be lights out, but when you're the long guy, yes, you're going to get hit because, frankly, you're not very good. You're good enough to be in the majors, but you're basically a 4A player. Right. And you can't just go out there and give up runs every time you pitch. You got to keep your team in the game sometimes.
Yeah, you got to at least manage the game and give your team a chance. I think Rogers really gives the Yankees no chance most of the times he's out there.
And I also don't like seeing Esmiel Rogers come in a situation where you just need to get out of the second inning. You know what I mean? He comes in with two guys on, and I think there was one out. That's like a short reliever jam. You bring a guy in who can get a double play ball or can get a couple pop-ups or some strikeouts. You don't bring in Esmiel Rogers. I know it's the second inning,
yeah,
but I always feel like you could use a guy for just that inning and then bring Rodgers in for the third inning.
Yeah, some guys are better suited to start a clean inning, you know. Some guys are not comfortable coming in with guys on base, especially with Rodgers. He's so hittable. You really that's kind of a puzzling decision by Girardi, I think. Have him start a clean inning with no one on, right. No outs.
Exactly. I always second guess. This is like my favorite example to use is in 2004, the ALCS. When I know, isn't this just such a fantastic memory to talk about?
Oh, is this Vasquez?
Yeah, Torrey brings in Vasquez with the bases loaded against Johnny Damon. It's like, it's freaking Javier Vasquez. He's not going to get out of that unscathed. There's 0% chance.
Yeah, he's a starter. He's not used to coming in with guys on base. And Esmo Rodgers is a starter by, you know, he was a starter with the Blue Jays, I think. And he's turned into a long man. But yeah, it's the same thing, and it makes no sense.
Can you believe that the Yankees had Javier Vasquez on their team at two different
times? Twice. Yeah, twice. It's absurd. Yeah. They traded, who they traded for the second time?
Melky.
They traded, oh yeah, great.
Great. I like Melky. I like Melky.
Yeah, no, he's turned into a good player. But I guess with the help of PEDs, but.
Whatever.
Trading trading for Vasquez a second time makes no sense.
And then Friday night in Kansas City, they're on a 3-game losing streak, which was their longest losing streak since the first week of the season. So that says something about how the team was playing.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't even lost 2 games since the Baltimore series early in the season. So they were, I mean, on a roll, which we know.
Yeah.
But you figure, okay, you look at the rotation, you got Pineda coming up, coming off that 16 strikeout game.
Mm-hmm.
You figure, this is it. He's been their ace this year. He's going to be the stopper. He got lit up.
Yeah, he's... I know you were hoping he would come into that start and kind of put a stop to the three-game... Was it three-game losing streak?
Three-game losing streak, yeah.
Because he's stepped up and he's been the ace of the staff since Tanaka went out.
Well, he's been the best pitcher all year.
Yeah, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball all year.
Led the league, and he was leading the league in strikeouts going into Friday.
Yeah, and then he goes out, gives up 10 hits. He only struck out, I think, one guy.
And let's face it, that Kansas City lineup is not anything special.
Really? I think it's. I mean, you look at their stats; they're all hitting over 300. It's crazy.
I don't know. I guess I just look at the names, and then nobody scares me.
Yeah. They don't have a superstar, but I feel like they all make contact, which is why I think Pineda only had one strikeout. They're also hard to strike out. You know, they're hard to put away, but you got to do better than going 5 1/3, giving up 10 hits and 5 run runs.
I mean, everyone's going to have their bad starts. That's just reality of baseball. You pitch 28, 30 times a year, you're going to have bad starts. But again, I was just hoping he was going to sort of step up as the ace. And as it turns out, CeCe stepped up Saturday, which was good to see.
Crazy, right? I mean, their only 2 wins so far on this road trip have been
CeCe.
With CeCe on the mound. Like, who would have thought that? I guess, you know, that's baseball, Susan. But
you got to do the Sterling voice when you do that.
But Old Reliable stepping up. He pitched really well. It wasn't like he pitched all right and got by. He actually made really good pitches. It was really good to see, especially back-to-back starts. I think that's a good sign. Hopefully his next start he can do it for a third time. But I liked what I saw out of CeCe.
You know what I liked that I saw him do is he was pitching inside to righties. I mean, even though he's only thrown 90-91, he's throwing inside. He was jamming guys. He was getting his off-speed pitches down. You still got to pitch smart with lesser stuff. Maybe he's learning, you know? Maybe it's a learning curve with CeCe.
Yeah, no, I agree. He came inside a lot and hit his spots. Because if you miss coming inside, you're going to leave it over the plate, which is what he's done more times than I'm sure he'd like. But, no, he pitched great.
The big hit was Headley's 3-run homer. Which, at least it wasn't a solo shot, right? They finally got a big hit with guys on.
Yeah. Headley, I've been down on Headley this season.
I was just going to ask, what's your take on Headley so far? As far as, what were you expecting out of Headley going in?
I was expecting second half Headley of last year, maybe even better than that with what he's getting paid. He's getting paid $13 million a year, and they want him to play good defense. He's already got 8 errors on the season.
His throws have been terrible.
Yeah, I hold my breath on every throw that he makes.
It almost feels like he's like aiming the ball over to first base.
Yeah, he's strange because he throws over the top, which you really don't see many infielders do. And I just hold my breath every time he throws it because I always feel like it's going to be a short hop. And he's already got 8 errors on the season. I mean, that's not good. He's got 8 errors in how many games have they played? 39 after today, I think. 38, 39. And his on-base percentage is under 300. That is awful.
Awful, awful.
Yeah.
So in one of the earlier episodes this year, Scott proclaimed that Chase Headley would have a better year than Pablo Sandoval because Sandoval got, you know, pretty much double the contract that Headley got, both switch-hitting third basemen. So it's an understandable comparison.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like Pablo is having that special of a year, but Headley has been extremely underwhelming so far, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. He's, especially from the right side, he's looked awful. I mean, he hit the home run from the right side on Friday, which is good. But other than that, he's been pretty weak from the right side.
And we had another A-bomb from A-Rod when they were already up 4-1 in the ninth. Why not just tack on a solo home run, right?
Classic A-Rod.
So here's a fun stat. Only one of his 10 home runs have come with guys on base. And he is hitting a whopping 167 with runners in scoring position.
That's awful.
So, I mean, and I'm picking on A-Rod here because it's fun. But the team as a whole is not hitting well with runners on, so it's not just A-Rod. But why do you think that is? Do you think it's the old typical A-Rod just can't get it done in the pressure situations? Or do you think maybe there's some other factor why he can't get, you know, big hits with guys on base?
I think that when guys are on base, he's seeing more off-speed pitches and he just looks foolish on them. You know, he's out in front, he's swinging up balls in the dirt. But when there's no one on, he's getting straight fastballs most of the time.
And he's proven he can hit them.
Yeah, I mean, he's turned around 97-mile-an-hour fastballs and hit it. You know, he hit one 477 feet at Tropicana Field. So he's got no problem hitting the fastball. It's the breaking ball that causes problems for him, and he's seeing that mostly with guys on base.
Yeah, I would agree that pitchers are not challenging him with guys on base, and he's just going to need to make adjustments. I mean, if he's going to take this a step from being a nice player in the middle of the lineup to really the centerpiece of the lineup, he's going to need to start hitting with guys on base, and he's going to need to start adjusting to the off-speed pitch. You're right. He looks like he's never hit a curveball before. That's how bad he looks on off-speed pitches.
Yeah. I mean, today he faced Wade Davis, which is no fun, you know, for anybody, but it was the eighth inning, I think. The Yankees had bases loaded, one out. So, you know, a big hit could get them right back in the game. It was 6-0 at the time. And Davis did challenge him with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball, but he fouled it right back. And that was the only fastball he got in the entire at-bat. So when he gets it in those situations, he has to hit it. And then he eventually struck out on it was a 92-mile-an-hour slider, which is just absurd.
That doesn't even compute in my brain. You said it, and I was like, 92-mile-per-hour slider. Okay, what does that mean? So that's 2 miles an hour faster than CC's fastball.
Yeah, it was nuts. And he struck out. He looked bad. So he got the fastball. I mean, he just didn't hit it. But he's got to make sure that when he gets that fastball, he doesn't foul it back with guys on base.
And today, just an absolute flat, big fart dud of a game, 6-0 loss. Edinson Volquez looked like, you know, whoever, pick your favorite pitcher, Felix Hernandez today. Just absolutely shoved the bats down their throat.
Yeah, and Capuano, his first start back, I guess I really wasn't expecting much.
Expecting more than 3 innings, though.
Yeah, you got to expect more. I got to expect at least 5. But he goes 3, gives up 4. And with the way the offense has been, you knew the game was over. It was just tough to watch.
And some news out of the game, Teixeira got hit in the toe. and left with what they're calling a big toe contusion, which is basically just a little owie, a little owie on his big toe.
He's so fragile. It's ridiculous.
Tashera is one of those guys that when you're right, when he sits out with an injury, I don't know. I shake my head because I feel like he doesn't play through the pain.
Yeah, and you remember when Sammy Sosa, I think it was Sosa, he sat out a few games because he sneezed and he tweaked his back. I'm surprised Tashera hasn't done something like that yet.
Yeah, that's got to be I got to find the link.
Knock on wood.
There was this like, you know, sort of BuzzFeed thing where it was like best sports injuries of all time. You remember when the Detroit reliever, I can't remember his name. He got hurt playing Guitar Hero.
Yes. It was his elbow, I think.
What the hell is his name?
He was good. He was
like 100.
Yeah, he's retired now. Oh, that's going to kill me.
Yeah, whatever his name is, though, and it's just, yeah, like the Sammy Sosa sneezing one, that time when Tashera was dizzy or something, and you just got to love those injuries.
Oh, no, one of my favorites is Matt Cain. You remember Matt Cain, what he did last, I think it was last year or 2 years ago. He was cutting sandwiches into what he called fancy triangles, and he sliced his finger open, he went on the DL.
Tremendous, just tremendous.
Yeah.
You got to, hey, Matt Cain, knuckles down when you're cutting food, man. That's like day one stuff. Oh, God. I don't know if Tashera is going to actually miss any time. It doesn't look like he's going to.
No, I think he said after the game he expects to play Tuesday. With the off day tomorrow, I think that should happen.
So, again, sort of just a dud game today. And it's good that, it is good. I'm happy Tashera is not actually hurt because they need Tashera.
Yeah, he's got, almost 30 RBIs already? He's on pace. He's on pace for...
like 140 or something crazy.
Yeah, and like 30 home runs, which is where he's been with the Yankees when he was healthy. And A-Rod's on pace for 40 home runs.
No, Tashera, I actually looked it up yesterday, is on pace for like 50-something.
Is he?
Yeah, and here's a good question. His career high is with the Yankees is 39.
39, yeah. No, 9.
Do you think he gets to 39 this year?
Probably not. So I don't know. I find it hard to – if he does, that'd be really impressive.
If he doesn't, though, that means he's slowing down.
Yeah.
Which is bad news for the Yankees.
do you expect A-Rod and Tashera to keep up their run production?
Do I expect it? Probably not, but I at the same time, I'm – hoping like hell they do because they're the only two that are at least producing. At least they're hitting for power.
Yeah, average with these guys, I feel like average across baseball is down. I feel like it's all about run production at this point. So as long as they produce runs, I don't really care what their averages look like, to be honest. But they've got 28 RBI from Tashera and 22 from A-Rod. That's pretty good production so far from the 3 and 4 hitters. And they've got 21 home runs between them.
And if they don't get it out of, like we already said, Beltran's starting to heat up. But they're going to need McCann. They really need, in addition to Tex and A-Rod, they need McCann, Beltran, and Headley. They need those guys. They're getting paid to produce.
Especially Headley. He's just been so under the radar with his performance. I feel like he gets a pass because... He's so boring, you know?
He really is. He's like vanilla ice cream on white bread with mashed potatoes on the side.
Yeah. He's very bland, yeah.
Yeah.
And Ellsbury and Gardner are going to do what they do. Beltran, you said Beltran's starting to heat up. So they really, I think Headley and McCann are really important.
And upcoming this week, they've got 2 against the Nationals, and then they come home finally, have an off day at home, which I guess will be nice for them. And they got 3 against Texas. And next Sunday night is Bernie Williams Day at the stadium.
How many empty seats do you think there'll be?
Well, it's the Sunday night game, which I'm sure is just thrilling. It's going to be a thrilling game.
And also, Memorial Day weekend, too. I guess people don't have work Monday, so people might show up, but... I feel like they don't even sell these. The whole thing is to sell these games with the ceremonies, but I remember the Torrey game, the Torrey ceremony last year. There was nobody there. O'Neal, there was nobody there. It's just not like it used to be.
It sucks too because I mean, I love Bernie Williams. I love Joe Torre. Oh, yeah. I love Paul O'Neal. Paul O'Neal, and I think he was your favorite player as well. He was my favorite player growing up. Mm-hmm. But do they really all deserve their own day? You know what I mean? I feel like some fans look at it and be like, this is just a marketing scheme.
Oh, it clearly is. They put out, the Yankees tweeted something about merchandise with Bernie, you know, his logo on it and everything. It's just to sell.
Bernie has a logo? Like his jazz like album logo, you mean?
No, he has a retirement. He has a logo for the day, for the his day.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's going to be, it's on shirts, it's on hats, it's on this, it's on that. It's just the whole market, which is what the Yankees wanted to do with A-Rod, with these home runs. But obviously that hasn't happened. So,
well, it still should be fun. I'll be watching because it's my childhood. It's my childhood.
So. I'll be there. I have tickets.
Are you going? Actually. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, so hopefully it doesn't rain. I know you sort of have bad luck with that.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. You ready to get into some Twitter questions? So I tweeted out earlier today that we're doing the podcast tonight, and I asked for some questions, and we got a couple. So you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So the first one comes from at Leanne B. Miller. When do you expect Tanaka back, and is he even going to stay healthy? We clearly need him right now. I mean, that's an understatement right there. We clearly need him right now. But when do you think we're going to expect Tanaka back?
I'd say another 3 weeks, 2-3 weeks. It's already been about 2 weeks, and I said it would take a month. And he's going to have a rehab start on Thursday. I'm not sure where yet. I don't think they announced that, either Scranton or Trenton. But he said he has no pain in his wrist and forearm, but I guess you got to take him at his word.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to need to ramp up to 80-plus 90 pitches before he's going to come back anyway. And that's at least 2-3 starts.
Yeah, and they're going to be cautious with him, I think. Obviously, they're going to make sure that he's built up to where he can be his usual self.
But he's definitely the next guy back. I think he's ahead of Nova.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think we'll see Tanaka before Nova, hopefully.
But we already sort of touched on this, but yeah, I mean, they clearly need Tanaka back in the rotation because they're, you know, Whitley's now hurt. Warren is, he had a great start, but he's given them no more than 5 innings before this. And Capuano is a crapshoot. They can't keep trotting out these starters that get pulled in the fourth inning. It's going to absolutely fry the pen, but you'll blink your eye and they'll be in third place if they keep doing that.
Yeah, they need a reliable guy to go out there who you can pencil in every time, can give you 7 innings, and can keep you in the game. I mean,
that is one thing though that I absolutely love about Eovaldi. He's an innings eater.
Oh yeah, no, he threw 200 innings last year, and he gave up the most hits in the National League. So I mean, he'll stay in there and he'll eat innings for sure. Tanaka, they especially need him because we haven't even talked about Pineda's health, you know, question marks.
It was one of those things that if I don't say it, maybe it's not an issue.
Yeah, I guess if there's nothing there, then, you know, don't worry about it. But I feel like that's always in the back of my mind with him.
Knock on wood, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully I didn't jinx him.
But, are you confident that once Tanaka's back, he's there to stay for the season?
No.
No, me neither. I would honestly, if you're asking me to put a percent on like if he's going to stay there for the rest of the season, I'm saying it's about 25%.
Oh yeah, they said that his, I guess it was tendonitis he had in his wrist and forearm is not related to his elbow.
Bullshit.
But come on, it's all connected.
Yeah,
he's either compensating for something and that's causing the tendonitis. I don't think tendonitis just goes away. I feel like it'll be a recurring thing throughout the season until he finally just decides to, you know, sit out. You know, it's up to him ultimately. They can't make him have surgery.
You know what would just be just typical Yankees. If so they signed him last year, gave him $125 million or whatever it is. And you know he has that opt-out clause after 4 years.
Yeah.
So in theory, say he after this year, he's like, you know what? I need surgery. Then he's out another year. They get like one health year out of him, and then he goes back to free agency.
Yeah.
That would just be – I would just sort of laugh and say, yep, classic Yankees contract right there.
And then he holds the Yankees up for
– another $150
million. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that happening for sure.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Well, Leanne, thank you for the Twitter question, and hopefully Tanaka's back out there soon. Next one is from at DMR711, and this was from a couple days ago. He said, I'm not one to question the great Joe Girardi. I can sense sarcasm there already. But but why bench Tex after a four-hit game for a guy who has 5 hits on the season? So what he was talking about is after Monday, Teixeira had 4 hits and a home run and then sat on Tuesday in favor of Garrett Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, it's a great question. The offense is rolling. You got 11 runs, a couple home runs, and the cleanup hitter's on the bench the next day.
Yeah, and Girardi's reasoning was that he wanted to give Teixeira a day off on the turf. But the last time I checked at Tropicana Field, the infield—you know—it's a dirt infield. Teixeira's not, you know, running down fly balls on turf. And he just, like you said, he'd gotten 4 hits the night before, and they need every ounce of offense they can get. And he puts in Garrett Jones, who we didn't mention it before, but Jones missed a line drive hit right at him. It went off his glove. It could have been an easy double play. And I think it ended up costing them some runs, if I remember correctly.
And Garrett Jones is a first baseman. I heard people saying like, oh, he's not a first baseman. He's an outfielder. No, he's a first baseman. You got to make that play.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it's tough for him because it's probably a tough role. He really hasn't played much because A-Rod has been, you know, hitting home runs. I think they expected Garrett Jones to be playing more than he has. So maybe Girardi wanted to get him some at-bats, but it's just one of those Girardi moves. Classic Girardi where a guy goes 4 for 5. And I can't remember the last time Teixeira went 4 for 5.
And hit a home run to left field.
Which is a good sign. And then the next day he's benched.
Yeah,
I feel like that's happened with Chris Young a lot this year too. Chris Young has had a great game. Instead of keeping the hot hand in there, the next day is benched because there's a righty on the mound. Like, it's just a classic Girardi binder, day off, guy needs rest, move. It's frustrating.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's like 3 or 4 moves this week where you can just clearly question what Girardi's doing, and it kind of makes you want to pull your hair out because Girardi will do that.
Yeah, it's been an annoying week for Girardi on the bench making moves, and they've coupled with, you know, they've been losing. It's just been a week to forget for the Yankees.
You know what? I actually want to ask you a question now that we're on the topic of Girardi. So Posada's book has been circulating recently, and one of the big things to come out of that was that Posada and Girardi had a little bit of a rift after Girardi became the manager in 08.
Mm-hmm.
And once Posada moved to full-time DH, I think in what, 2012 was it? Or 2011? Whatever.
11. It's 11.
He wouldn't even let him sit in on like the catcher's meetings or anything like that. And it just seemed like Posada basically said he did not agree with the way Girardi handled some of his player interactions, you know, telling guys he had a day off. He would just text them. Whereas you'd know 100%, you know, before, even the day before with Torre, if you were getting a day off or what he was thinking. And it seems like Girardi is a little bit more closed door policy, maybe. Yeah, so I guess my question is, you know, do you think that some other players might feel this way? Or how do you think that rift maybe happened with Posada and Girardi?
I mean, Posada is such a prideful guy, you know, that when he was made the full-time DH, you know, that obviously pissed him off. But Posada did mention that, you know, when Torre was there, Torre was like a father figure, and that when Torre left, Girardi was just a manager. He was just another manager. The entire clubhouse changed. I think it all stems back to Posada taking Girardi's job. as a player.
It's got to, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Girardi's got to be the bigger man in that situation. I mean, Posada's a 27-year-old kid. He's got 30 home run power out of the catcher position. He's going to take your job, dude. Like,
yeah, I think they also left Girardi there too long. I mean, Posada didn't start playing full time till he was what, like you said, 27?
98.
Yeah,
I don't know exactly how old he was, but it was 1998.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see when Posada has his day, what the interaction is, if he mentions, you know, Girardi in his speech about winning, you know, winning in 2009 and everything. That'll be fun to see.
Yeah, it was he was 26 in 1998, and that was the first time he had he played more than 60 games.
Yeah. You know, Posada had that lawsuit. Yeah, he lost like $11 million in some scam, financial scam. Like he invested money with these guys and they took his money. And on the lawsuit documents, his birth date was a year earlier than what it was when he was playing. So Posada's actually a year older.
Oh, I actually never knew that.
Yeah, so he'd lied about his age. Like, you know, you hear all these guys. Soriano did that. Yeah. Alfonso Soriano.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting that Posada's actually a year older than what he said he was when he was playing.
I mean, that even goes to show you how much more of a durable guy he was. I mean, he really only had one injury season, and he caught a ton of games. So,
yeah, no, he caught late into his career.
So, okay, well, as we said, hopefully they can turn it around this week. A couple off days should help. I know they're going to help me. I think I'm going to enjoy not watching a Yankees game tomorrow night. I don't know about you.
And they miss Scherzer, I think. I don't think he pitches.
He's been two games. Did you see his line from Saturday night?
I heard about it. I heard he pitched well, but I didn't see it. What was it?
I can't remember. I don't recall the exact stats, but he's just filthy.
I think Gio Gonzalez pitches Tuesday against Eovaldi, which should be interesting. Because I mean, Eovaldi has faced the Nationals, you know,
a lot
with the
All right, well, big week coming up. I just want to remind everybody about the voicemail line, 646-480-0342. We played a voicemail last week, but Scott's the tech guy, and he's not here right now, so he sort of mans all that stuff. So hopefully next week we've got some voicemails for you. Thanks again for the Twitter questions, at Leanne B. Miller and at DMR711. We appreciate it, and we appreciate you guys listening. So until then, Rich, thanks for coming on, and catch you next time.
Thanks, man.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.